This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz Dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
You know, today, actually, we're eating something that, at least when I first think about this thing... Actually, we're not eating it. We're just talking about it. But when I first think of it, I always think of it in its raw form. But it's also often cooked. And it is...
We'll talk about that.
Sprouts. We're talking about sprouts. Yeah,
all kinds of sprouts.
Yeah, alfalfa, soybean, mung bean. We're not going to be talking about, like, you know, getting into the nitty-gritties of sprouting stuff at home or how you would do that or whatever, because I don't want to.
I mean, it probably involves, like, a damp cloth or something.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about that, but we're going to be mostly talking about, how you use these sprout things.
Okay, let's sprout our way onto memory lane.
So, Matthew, I think that my first encounter with alfalfa sprouts came... in a sandwich, as I think most people's first encounter with alfalfa sprouts arrives.
I could believe sandwich or like a salad with various like seeds in it.
Mm-hmm. So I remember we did an episode once where I mentioned this like defunct health food store in Oklahoma City called The Earth.
Absolutely remember this.
Really good carob brownies. Anyway, they definitely...
Probably last time I said I don't believe you, and I still don't believe you.
They had, you know, sandwiches that they would make on site, like on some sort of very like seeded sandwich bread. And of course there was like grated carrot. There was some sort of like white cheese, Havarti or provolone or something. And there was always alfalfa sprouts on that sandwich. And I think that that was my first time. Oh, and avocado. You got to have avocado. Okay. Where you have sprouts on a sandwich, you must have avocado. But hold on. Well, do you want to jump in with a memory lane and then I'll come back with a later one?
Sure. Yeah. I mentioned to wife of the show, Lori, last night that we were doing a sprouts episode and that I was going to mention my standard lunchbox sandwich when I was in elementary school was a peanut butter and alfalfa sprout sandwich.
No.
Oh, yes.
No.
Yes.
What?
Later, there was some peanut butter and honey action, but
how did
a lot.
This seems so crunchy.
So my parents were hippies.
Well, but
I went to a hippie elementary school.
Peanut butter and alfalfa sprout. Have you had it as an adult?
No.
Have you had it lately? Well, it might be good.
I mean, I think it kind of probably is because like they have the alfalfa sprouts have a nice crunchy texture that I'm sure goes well with like I'm sure it was like an Adams, you know, natural peanut butter. But I don't think I want it.
Okay.
And also, I remember sometimes I don't think my parents would ever get carob, but it was like a snack that like little like carob bites were a thing that I remember. And I remember thinking as a kid, this sucks. And like when I'm a grown up, I'm only going to have real chocolate. And so far, I have stuck to that.
Good job. Good job. Way to be consistent. I have to mention, I think my most memorable encounter with sprouts, which I wrote about in my first book, A Homemade Life. So when I worked at Whole Foods at the sandwich counter, I think this would have been like summer of 1999, there were a number of customers mostly male identifying, as far as I could tell, who would come in literally every night and get their dinner from like the Whole Foods prepared foods case, like rotisserie chicken and brown rice and stuff like that. One of the guys who came in every single night, at some point, I mean, I think I was enough of an idiot that I think I probably was like accidentally flirting with him because he was like talking with me and it was fun to have somebody pay attention to me. He wound up asking me on a date.
And this sounds familiar. Okay.
Yeah. He lived like on this road that went up toward Mount Tam and it was very wooded. And he lived in this like incredible like tree house. He was like a new age music producer or something.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. Anyway.
I can't believe you're not still together.
I can't believe that I didn't like that something gravely awful didn't happen to me because I was young enough and stupid enough that I drove to this man's house, like a total stranger, first date. We're like in the woods. Wow. And I walk into his house and he shows me to a tatami table. He was not Asian. Okay.
Sure.
There, he had a tatami table and is it an erdu, the one stringed Chinese instrument?
I'll take your word for it.
Well, anyway, he had been taking lessons on playing this Chinese stringed instrument. But anyway, he showed me into the kitchen and was super proud that morning he had gone to the farmer's market and he had bought, I think, 5 different kinds of sprouts to assemble a salad for me. And this was the entirety of the dinner. He took a plate and like carefully with chopsticks arranged piles of sprouts on my plate with a few halved cherry tomatoes and like a drizzle of olive oil and balsamic vinegar, and then did the same for himself. And we went and sat at his tatami table and ate this completely unsatisfying meal.
And later he went on to found Noma.
That sounds right. Yeah, there was also reindeer liver. No, not really. But anyway, yeah, I lived to tell. I think I went home and I had a bagel with cream cheese or a peanut butter sandwich or something because I was starving. And that was our first and only date. And it was doomed from the start, but I lived.
That was it awkward then in the store after that? Like when he came in?
I don't think so.
Okay, good.
I think that he was respectful enough of like my boundaries that when I was at his house, we were just kind of like friends.
Good for
and
him.
So I think the fact that it didn't.
Good for him for doing the bare minimum to be a decent person.
Yeah, good for him for not like.
What a guy. Let's give him some kind of medal.
Doing anything violent or abusive. Wow.
Yeah, or like terrorizing you at work after that.
Yeah, no. I think we just kind of were friends after that.
Good. Okay, great.
Yeah. So that story actually ends really well, but the sprouts were fine. They were fine.
So I intended to go to the farmer's market yesterday and come back with 5 kinds of sprouts because there is absolutely a 5 kinds of sprouts stand at the Broadway farmer's market in Seattle. They were not there yesterday, so I didn't get any sprouts. And then you didn't come over today. So it's just as well because I would have been stuck with a lot of sprouts.
Yeah, sorry.
But no, it's fine. It all worked out. My other sprout memory lane, actually, I've got a couple in Japan involving sautéed or stir-fried bean sprouts. Do you remember? So the first time I think I had stir-fried bean sprouts in Japan was at Sato Steakhouse, which is a steakhouse in Kichijoji that I went with Teenager of the Show December in 2012 on our first major trip to Japan. And we got steak, of course, and it comes with just some very simply sautéed vegetables, including bean sprouts that are kind of sautéed in the steak juices. And these were so good. December had no interest in them, so I like took all of theirs, and it was like the best thing on the plate, and the steak was very good. And then when you and I, our first trip to Tokyo, we went to a soup dumpling place in Koenji.
I remember.
And we got a dish that is very common in Japan that's stir-fried bean sprouts, garlic chives, and a little bit of pork for flavor.
It was
so good. That dish was so good.
It was so good.
And the bean sprouts are really the star of the dish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, so, okay, we're going to come back around to talking about ways that different sprouts are used in different cuisines. Mm-hmm. But first, I just want to, you know, I think that really, until recently, it never occurred to me like what sprouts actually were or where they came from.
Okay.
So basically, they're seeds, alfalfa seeds, for instance, or a bean that is germinated for the purpose of consumption. So People like to do this for nutrition because, mm-hmm. especially in the case of beans, sprouting makes them more nutritious. And we'll talk about how that is okay. in a second. Basically, all you need is like seeds or beans, water, a jar, maybe like a mesh top on the jar or a muslin covering.
This all sounds right to me. I've never yeah. done it, but I, you know what? I probably did do this like in preschool.
Well, anyway, I think that we definitely did do it like as science experiments sure. and stuff, right? But as you can imagine, there's like a real tendency for mold and bacterial growth and rot and stuff because they need moisture and warmth.
Sounds like fun.
Anyway, you can sprout any viable seed, basically. But of course, some should not be eaten raw. Like you should not eat kidney bean sprouts.
Because like kidney beans have to be pretty well cooked to be digestible, right?
That's right. And I think also that like the seeds of, I don't know, tomatoes or eggplant or something, I think you're not supposed to eat those sprouts either.
Okay. Like it never even occurred to me that like those would be sprouts.
Yeah.
Right? But anything sprouts. Right?
Sure. I mean, think about like the whole microgreens phenomenon.
Sure.
You know?
I think about it a lot.
I think about it all the time. I can't stop thinking about it.
Those greens are so little.
Oh, they're so cute.
I'm waiting for nano greens to come along.
Bean sprouts are, of course, very common ingredient around the world. But people also like, you know, to sprout alfalfa, to sprout oats, sprouting brown rice, sprouted quinoa. Sprouting is part of the process of malting barley.
I did know that like you sprout the seed and then like immediately like,
I don't know.
Like roast it.
I don't know.
I think you roast it.
Maybe. 1 tablespoon of alfalfa seeds can yield up to 3 full cups of sprouts.
Wow.
And it only takes like a week. Is that crazy?
Should we be doing this? What about chia pets?
Hold on. I want to talk for a minute because so it drives me nuts when we see like things about like sprouting makes things more nutritious or whatever because
I want that voice to come back, please.
Anyway, but I was really interested actually in finding the reason for this, like if it's actually true. So this actually makes sense to me. So during sprouting, a lot of the complex compounds that are in the seed or the bean or whatever are broken down into a simpler form, which makes them obviously more digestible. But sprouting also causes enzymes to get working. So it results in ultimately the amount of starches decreasing in the seed.
Sure.
And an increase in protein, fat, and fiber.
Right. Because like in the seed, like these things are in like, you know, storage form so
exactly.
that they're like, they want to like pack as much energy as they can in there, but in a form that isn't like readily usable. And now they're in like growth mode and they need to like unlock those things and start putting them into the sprout, I assume.
Yeah. And so like if you sprout,
because cool, I made that up.
If you sprout cereal grains, I mean, I think that's yeah. part of it, Matthew. But if you sprout cereal grains, it improves their like vitamin content in part because vitamins are actually produced as the sprout grows. I think I have a tendency to forget that like living things generate these nutrients like mm-hmm. from scratch. Do you know yeah. what I mean? So there's a part of me that's like, oh, well, how can a sprout possibly be more nutritious than a seed? But of course, like it's got enzymes. It's got all kinds of stuff that's being activated to make other things.
What's
in
the
it.
Name of this new character?
Molly.
Molly Sprout.
Molly Sprout. So there are like real reasons why these things are thought of as being nutritious.
So we should all eat unlimited quantities of them all the time, right?
So I saw on Wikipedia that you probably shouldn't eat more than about 1 pound of sprouts a day.
Or what? Or what are they going to do to me?
I'm not sure. I also wanted to point out, because this is interesting too, if we're talking about bean sprouts, that sprouting reduces toxins and other like anti-nutritional compounds that are often found in raw legumes.
Okay.
So
why do they have to be so anti-nutritional? Is it because they're mean?
That was a term I found on Wikipedia, and I couldn't think of another term to replace it.
No, I get it.
Yeah. So I did the research for today's episode, but you had written a question on the agenda when I opened it up.
And my question is this. Are sprouts dangerous? Let me take that again. Are okay. sprouts dangerous?
What have you heard about sprouts?
I've heard that they're a great way to get food poisoning.
Ah, you're right, Matthew. Yes. So here's the thing. Yeah, they are dangerous. The CDC lists raw alfalfa and bean sprouts among the foods most likely to cause food poisoning. And they have definitely caused outbreaks of salmonella and E. coli. And the reason is, we just talked about the way that they grow, right? They grow best in warm, very moist conditions, which can lead to the growth of germs.
And then are often eaten raw.
That's okay. Right. So, cooking sprouts can thoroughly kill any harmful germs. But sprouts, at least alfalfa sprouts, are not often served cooked. Apparently, contamination also often tends to come from the seeds. Like if they're brought in from fields, I mean, I suppose they could come in with any kind of bacteria or whatever on them, which then just grows like wildfire grows in wet and moist conditions. I mean, warm and moist conditions.
So other than cooking, is there anything we can do about this?
Yes. So, I think if you're immune compromised or if you are really worried about it, you could do the old thing where you mix up a really diluted bleach solution, like according to the bleach bottle label. But the CDC feels that it is fine to just wash your produce well in water.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's no guarantee.
That would make my sprouts kind of moist.
I think it would. But think about like bean sprouts. I mean, those.
Yeah, sure.
Like you could lay that out on a towel and blot, 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 blot.
Okay.
But of course,
putting bleach on my produce, although it's probably fine in dilute form.
I feel weird about it too, but I think a lot of people do it. I mean, maybe especially people who are undergoing chemotherapy or things where they really have to be careful. So I don't know, I feel like if I'm going to get food poisoning, I really would like it to be from something more
like a real juicy burger.
Va-va-va-voom than an alfalfa sprout.
Yeah.
That said, if you're using bean sprouts or whatever, those you may be cooking.
I often do.
So then you don't have to worry about it. Let's talk about cooking sprouts, because I think everybody is aware that alfalfa sprouts exist and you can find them at a salad bar.
You can put them on a peanut butter sandwich.
Put them on a peanut butter sandwich. You can put them on any kind of sandwich. But what about like soybean sprouts?
I bought some and cooked them just the other day.
How do we know if we've got soybean sprouts?
Okay, they'll be labeled. So compared to mung bean sprouts, soybean sprouts they're like thicker and hardier, and they have like a yellow soybean stuck to the end of them.
Not
that mung bean sprouts don't ever have a mung bean, but the soybean sprout it's like bigger and heavier than a mung bean.
Okay.
So they look quite different. Like if you go to especially to a Korean market, but like probably a Japanese market also, they will have both and once you've like compared them once, you won't mix them up. They both look like bean sprouts, but they cook up. They cook quite differently in the kitchen.
And so how do soybean sprouts cook up?
The way that I have used soybean sprouts is really only like to make kongnamul muchim is the Korean term to go on bibimbap or as a side dish. And you start by boiling them for 10 to 20 minutes.
That long?
Yeah. You really want to like soften them up a little and then toss them with like some garlic, soy sauce, sesame oil.
And so would those be served as like banchan?
Yeah, absolutely. Or as a topping for bibimbap, which is like, banchan on rice.
Yeah. So according to Wikipedia, soybean sprouts may have been eaten in Korea since the Three Kingdoms period, which was like...
Oh, that's...
Which was like 60 BC to like 700 AD.
That's when Korea was ruled by George Clooney, Mark Wahlberg, and Ice Cube, right?
Oh, it was Epiphany.
Yes.
Yeah, wow, the Three Kings.
Three Kings, 2 weeks in a row. Let's see how we can work it in next time.
Okay. Anyway, soybean sprouts also show up in a Korean medical text from the 1200s.
Okay.
Many sources refer to them as being one of the main foods consumed during times of famine in Asia. And yeah, I mean, they show up all over Korean cooking in particular, stir-fried on top of bibimbap, as you mentioned. There are like fried rice dishes involving these things, soups. And apparently in contemporary South Korea, this is according to Wikipedia, there is a spicy pork bulgogi dish made with a large number of soybean sprouts. Will you pronounce it for us, Matthew? Is this Kongnamul bulgogi?
Kongnamul bulgogi.
Okay.
Or Kongbul.
Popular among young people.
Sure. Why wouldn't it be? I have had that dish and it was very good.
What about mung bean sprouts? Okay. So how are these going to be different?
So if you think bean sprouts and you're not sure which kind you've had and it was not in a Korean restaurant, probably it was mung bean sprouts. So like on top of or mixed into your pad thai is going to be mung bean sprouts.
Oh, okay.
They're much, much lighter in texture than soybean sprouts, to the extent that like you can just kind of toss them with your hot noodles and they'll wilt a little bit and will be delicious.
And they are also what might be on top of pho.
Yes.
In a Vietnamese restaurant.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, they're great. Like I love them. Like they're often an ingredient in like a miso ramen. Really good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, I think that what I've been thinking of as like just general bean sprouts is mung bean sprouts then. I was interested to see on Wikipedia that they can be sprouted either in light or dark conditions, and there are reasons why you would want to do one or the other.
Okay, I didn't know that. Let's hear it.
The mung beans that are sprouted in the dark will be crisper in texture and whiter, which I guess is the case of like commercially available Chinese bean sprouts, but they have less nutritional content than ones grown in the sun.
Okay.
Growing them in full sunlight is apparently not recommended because it can cause them to overheat or dry out.
Okay, I'll stop doing that.
Growing them in the full sun?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, I you know, it doesn't say anything about like what's the alternative to the dark conditions. Clearly, we don't want to put them in the full sun. I guess they're a partial shade plant.
Well, I mean, in my basement, like I've got a bunch of grow lamps and I'm like growing some stuff down there. So maybe I'll put in some bean sprouts. This isn't true.
Apparently, subjecting the sprouts to pressure, I guess, as they're growing, like by placing a weight on top of them in their sprouting container, will result in larger, crunchier sprouts, similar to those sold in grocery stores. So, you know, if you are sprouting at home, man.
I'm sprouting at home. I think you know what I mean.
Gross.
So I'm kind of weirdly in love with mung bean sprouts. Like when M2M Market opened in my neighborhood, the H-Mart variant, one of the things I was most excited about was like, I can get mung bean sprouts anytime I need them because they stopped selling. They sell them now again at Safeway, I think, but for a while they didn't have them at Safeway or QFC. And like, I wanted to make pad thai often.
I'm so happy for you.
Yep. I'm happy for me too. It's been great.
Is there anything else we want to say about sprouts?
Yes. I added a last minute dark horse sprout to the agenda, possibly.
Ooh,
after you printed.
Sorry, I printed my agenda too early.
Okay. Well, you're
go
about,
ahead, Matthew.
You're about to get blindsided with this sprout action.
Okay.
Daikon sprouts, kaiwate in Japanese.
Okay.
Available at Japanese, Korean, other Asian supermarkets. I wouldn't be surprised if they were sold at like a Whole Foods or something. They're usually sold in like a plastic clamshell that you like peel the top off and pull. Yeah.
Oh, I have had these in at sushi restaurants.
And they have like a little couple of leaves at the top of each sprout. Yeah.
And they really taste a lot like radishes.
Yes. They got a wonderful like kind of peppery radish flavor and good crunch. They're great on my favorite way to have them is on the cold noodle dish Hiyashi Chuka. Which is like cold ramen with a very tart broth and various ingredients on top, like sprouts, usually some like sliced ham, daikon, egg, so on. They're great in temaki hand rolls. They're found in salads. Really good ingredient to know about.
I think that they show up in pretty much all salmon skin rolls. If you ever get salmon skin hand rolls.
Yes, absolutely.
Love those.
Great.
Okay. Well, Matthew, thank you for adding that. I loved being blindsided. It was a really nice way to be blindsided.
But wait, I've got another sprout. No, I don't.
What?
No, I don't.
Okay. Matthew, do we have any segments today?
Sure we do. We've got some spilled mail. And it comes to us from listener Yuna, who writes, "Hi, Molly and Matthew. I hope you guys are having a lovely week. Molly, my warmest congratulations to the newest addition to your family."
Oh, thank you.
"A question for you guys. With inflation and grocery prices kicking everyone's butt, I would like to pick your brain on your recipes that are cheap but still edible. There are no standards. For example, lettuce smoothies." I did not write this. Listener Yuna wrote this.
That is not where I thought this was going to go.
"Send you all my love. Best, Yuna."
There are no standards.
No
For
standards.
For example, lettuce smoothies.
Okay, I mean, to be fair, listener Yuna was right. Like, writing into our show, like, if you have no standards, we are the people to ask.
Yeah, for sure.
But on the other hand, we weren't going to recommend lettuce smoothies.
Okay, Matthew, let's go back and forth.
Okay,
I've got one right off the bat.
Yeah.
So beans and greens.
Yes.
I try to always have chickpeas in the house. I mean, a can of chickpeas. And I really like, you know, sort of like Progresso, that kind of like mainstream brand of canned chickpeas. I think they're much tastier than like health foodie brands. All you need is like two cans of chickpeas and a head of escarole. You probably maybe already have some bouillon or some chicken broth around, maybe a little garlic, and you are good to go for dinner.
Yeah.
Also, if you happen to have dried chickpeas, even cheaper way to go.
I was also going to talk about chickpeas.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So I think kind of like, I want to take a step back here and say, like, if you really are in a position where you want or need to save money on food, you're going to be cooking food like daily. And so I don't think the approach of like, you know, I'm going to make this inexpensive dish and this other unrelated inexpensive dish and this thing, like, that is a good way to drive yourself nuts and, like, you know, be shopping all the time and probably not save any money. And what you really want to do is sort of like find like a track you can get on where you are making related dishes from a cuisine that lends itself to inexpensive meals. And so the thing I would recommend is like, and it doesn't have to be like this specific cuisine or this specific book, but obviously you're not going to be cooking a lot of meat if you're looking to save money, certainly. Vegetarian and like semi-vegetarian Indian food is incredibly flavorful and, you know, satisfying and delicious and based on very cheap ingredients. And so,
and like bulked out with rice.
Yes.
Too.
So if you have an Instant Pot, like, I love the book Indian Food Under Pressure by Ashley Singh Thomas. The dish that immediately came to mind when I read this question was her chana masala, which makes a huge amount, starts with like, you know, one bag of chickpeas that probably costs $2 and adds a bunch of spices and a little bit of canned tomato and an onion. And you serve it with some rice, and like the cost per serving is going to be negligible and the flavor is enormous. You can put in a little yogurt if you want. And then once you've got, you know, you are probably, if you haven't made something like this before, you are probably going to be buying some new spices, which you can then use to make like 15 other inexpensive vegetarian recipes from her book.
I would say the same thing goes for a number of like either sort of like Chinese American or Japanese inspired dishes that I make regularly. So my family will have, I don't know, some sort of something over rice. Let's say it could be like chana masala or something. And then the next night I will turn the leftover rice into fried rice. And I feel like I've got my fried rice kind of down to a formula at this point. I always make sure I have bacon in the freezer. And I just basically cut off like frozen strips of bacon and start my fried rice with bacon. So I've always got that in the freezer. I've always got carrots. I've always got frozen peas. I've always got some sort of green soy sauce, a little bit of MSG maybe if you want, some sugar, some salt, some kind of onion, scallion, great, but you've probably got onion. There you go. You've got a second meal. Oh, and eggs in there too.
Oh yeah.
Second meal. So yeah, I always try to make more rice than I need because you can always make a whole dinner out of fried rice using whatever you've got in the fridge.
Yeah. And thing I would say, if you are comfortable buying inexpensive meat or buying meat in bulk, like buying a whole pork shoulder, like this is something that like if you shop at a like a Safeway will sometimes go on sale for like 99 cents a pound. And you can like grind some of it and, you know, stir fry and serve it over rice or make like a homemade sausage really quickly. You can turn some of it into carnitas. You can like braise some of it and do something else. Like it goes a really long way and is very good.
Okay, hold on. There are a couple other things I wanted to say.
If you go to Wendy's, there's the 4 for $4.
You know, I was going to say that I also think that I have been able to save some money in my cooking by leaning hard on my freezer.
Yeah.
By saving things in my freezer.
But don't lean so hard on it that it falls over and crushes.
No, but like by saving like little bits and bobs to make stock or whatever. And also by like buying things when they're on sale.
Yeah.
Like, or like, you know, when you buy hamburger buns, for instance, mm-hmm. right? It always comes with like 8 hamburger buns. Well, my family has 3 people who eat meals. One person who is not yet eating anything solid. So I, if I'm really like on top of it and I just stick my hamburger buns right back in the freezer, I've got like at least one more meal out of that without like letting it go to waste or mold.
Absolutely. Good old bits and bobs Weisenberg.
I feel like these are all really obvious things, but they do require like thinking one step ahead.
You should like promote Ames to burger status. So then you can like serve four burgers, freeze 4, and let's serve 4 more burgers.
Mm-hmm. Listener Yuna, thank you so much for this question.
Hey Molly, what you snacking?
Hey, what you snacking? You gotta tell me what you're snacking. Or I'll release the Kraken. So what you snacking?
What you snacking? Ooh, I know I've already mentioned this, but when I was sitting around yesterday looking at this agenda and thinking like, what is the point of what you snacking, right? Like
what
kinds
point?
Of things are worthy of being mentioned? I have to again say how perfect crunchy Cheetos are. And I don't understand why Cheetos Puffs are the ones that tend to get more like airtime, shelf space, etc.
I don't know if they are, because like, aren't like Flamin' Hot the most Flamin' popular Hot, and those are crunchy?
Oh, maybe you're right.
But maybe Flamin' Hot have started to push out the non-Flamin' crunchy.
I feel like the Flamin' Hot ones are fine, but the regular crunchy Cheeto, I can't get enough of it. They're so good. I buy 2 bags at a time and Ash and I absolutely just decimate them.
Yeah, sure,
so
of course.
I feel like it's like the exact kind of thing I want when I'm cooking. Like I'll pour a little tiny bowl of Cheetos and I'm just like,
absolutely.
It's fantastic. A moment of pure pleasure.
I've got a new snack that was something that wife of the show, Lori, brought home from the co-op. And it is Moonshot Snacks brand sourdough sea salt crackers. And they really look and taste like a good homemade cracker. Like there's something very like rustic about them. Like looks, I don't think they were actually docked by hand with a fork, but that sort of cracker. And really good sourdough flavor. And they remind me a little bit of, we used to get these cookies. We used to get these crackers that were Whole Foods 365 brand sourdough crackers that were very tasty. And I don't think they've made them in a while, or like also we don't really go to Whole Foods anymore, but these Moonshot ones, really good.
Cool. Matthew, I think that you have a now, but wow.
I do. And it is an article in the New York Times from a great food writer that you're probably already familiar with, Ligaia Mishan.
It's called "Why Do American Diners Have Such a Limited Palate for Textures?"
Yeah, and it's a long article about why American diners mostly just want to eat crunchy Cheetos. No, it's about how, like, if you go to like, I travel to Japan sometimes, as you may have heard, and like there are lots of foods enjoyed in other places in the world that are enjoyed primarily for their texture and have textures that you essentially never encounter in quote unquote American cooking.
Yeah, I mean, like the piece starts out with jellyfish.
Yeah,
I think that the vast majority of white Americans, at least, would never guess that you can eat a jellyfish.
Yeah, I remember the first time I had jellyfish at a Chinese restaurant. And was nervous about trying it. And I was like, oh, I see why people like this. Like, you know, it has a texture that I'd never had before. And it tastes only like what it was flavored with, because it is, you know, it's eaten as a textural food. Okay. So anyway, I love this article. It's long and goes places. I think you'll really enjoy it. And we'll link to it in the show notes.
Great. All right. Well, our producer is Abby Circatella.
Please sign up for Molly's wonderful newsletter, I've Got a Feeling, at at mollyweisenberg.substack.com.
Rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
and hang out with other Spilled Milketeers at everythingspilledmilk.reddit.com. I just want so much for there to be a cool nickname for our listeners, so that like
when Milketeers.
So that when we like the revolution comes, we can call them like the Minutemen or whatever, but not that.
Okay. I mean, I think that they're probably going to be, well, they all have pitchfork rooms.
They all have joke? Pitchfork rooms.
They all have pitchfork rooms.
I do not.
Oh, but, you
but I'm trying.
Oh. I'm 100%
on board. I give their pitchfork rooms a 10.0.
Well, it was a reference to the playroom in 50 Shades of Grey.
Okay, but why were we talking?
But I don't know why it was a pitchfork room.
Was this on our How to Build a Sex Room episode?
No, bonus this episode? Was like... This was like 5 years ago.
Great. Okay. I'm glad. No, I'm glad. I'm sure it was a delightful bit.
It's like on the grape episode, which was literally a decade ago, I think. I still remember you saying, "Behold, can you hear the crunching of my seed?"
Okay, but I remember that, but what did that have to do with pitchforks?
I don't know. I'm just quoting things I remember.
Oh, so that like, pitchfork room may have been a different episode.
Oh, the pitchfork room was very much a different episode.
Okay, the pitchfork room sounds like a really cool bar.
It does, doesn't
right?
it?
Like they would have like cool like devil decor.
Deviled eggs.
We have cool deviled eggs.
Okay.
Okay, maybe right. We just call our listeners deviled eggs.
You know, actually, I would like to get some spilled mail about this.
Okay,
us know what you think the collective term for listeners of our podcast should be. Spilled Milketeers.
Yeah, contact at spilledmilkpodcast.com. I did actually recently have a listener write in because I came up with the term Lily, which we agreed never to talk about again. but I'm talking about it again.
What was it again?
A listener,
I'd like yum.
Is it listener? I'd like to yum.
that was lilty.
But this person described themselves as a listener, Lily. Listener, I'd like to yuck. Which I don't want to yuck any of our listeners.
No, our listeners are
unless
yummy.
That's what they're into.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Webster Burton.
So, you know,
this is great so far, like A+.
Okay. I'm sorry. I don't know where to go from here.
I don't either.
Okay.